Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to enter into the world of the paranormal. Of ghosts, UFOs, demons, Bigfoot, and generally anything unexplained. We live in a diverse world where we don't fully understand everything that happens around us. These are the topics that we are discussing on Paranormal Horizons. Stay tuned with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang, as we look a little deeper into the world of the paranormal. Paranormal Horizons begins now. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir. Oh, as with always, Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Pretty good. I got a 3-day weekend, so I'm excited about that. I still got one day left on that weekend, so it's a rarity for me, so I'm going to thoroughly enjoy it, and I probably won't leave my place. I think it's going to just be like Netflix for 3 days straight.
Netflix. Are you going to go on a Netflix marathon?
I've done pretty good so far. I've definitely getting my fair share of movies in and just some R&R time. How was your week?
Really good. Just getting a lot of things done as far as my business goes. And, yes, I'm going to go live on air, live feed, this coming Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. It's the night of the full moon, or is it the full moon or new moon? I don't remember. Days are melding in together, but I believe that is the new moon. No, it's the new moon. So I will do a live feed for half an hour and just kind of like the nuts and bolts of my work as a psychic medium and Chinese medicine, medical intuitive. So, yeah, I'm excited and just kind of see what happens. So half an hour I think is perfect for me and be able to help those that are having questions or anything like that. So, yeah, that, what about you, Jason? How was your week? What did you do? Anything spectacular?
I just work, sleep, and eat. That's about it. But we have some exciting things going on with our show. You know, Paranormal Horizons used to be on a couple radio stations, and thanks to the hard work of Sherry, we're working on getting back on the old stations we are, which was KNCP and now I'm drawing a blank. I can't remember. It was 106.2
FM. I'm drawing a blank. Just cross our fingers. We're working on that. And we'll be live streaming not only on Paranormal Horizons on Blog Talk Radio, but we'll be live on air on FM as you tune in. So we'll keep our listeners abreast as it comes new and just cross your fingers. Everything's going to be fall into place. But anyway, I want to go and get some time in with our returning guest. She is just a jewel, highly respected in the paranormal, spiritual, paracon field. Love to have her, love her energy, and just a wealth of information. She is an author, House of Darkness, House of Light, a trilogy about her experiences in living in a haunted house. She is the oldest sibling of the Perrone family, and the original Conjuring, the movie, was supposedly based on the family, but it was far from what the real story is. So we don't really have an agenda, but we're going to bring the floor to Andrea and just kind of go with the flow tonight. So whatever she wants to talk about and whatever we get into, I'm sure it's going to be very interesting and very informative to our listeners.
Absolutely, and she's in queue. We'll bring her on right now.
All right.
Hi.
Good evening, Andrea.
Hey.
Hi, Jason. Hi, Sherry. It's
hey.
So good to be back with both of you again. It's been a while. I guess it's been about 9 months, maybe a year, since I've
yeah.
been on your broadcast. And
I'm so sorry with the time, the confusion of the time. I want to apologize. I was just hoping that we were going to tag you on the right time and everything. So I'm glad we were able to confirm and make it a go. So.
Yeah, well, you know, I am very adept at many things, but mathematics isn't one of them.
you and me both.
That's okay. You're here, and that's all that counts.
It's like, do
oh,
I add three? Do I minus three? You know, add, subtract, multiply, divide. You know, whoa, which way? So many options, so little time. You know.
Well, I'm glad for you to take your time, and at your East Coast time, which is like 3 hours difference from us, to be able to stay up and be on our show. We really appreciate it. So we're going to give
Andrea,
you the floor. Whatever we talk about, we're just going to go with the flow, just like anything else. So,
I wanted to say real quick, Andrea, you're not alone. I had to get some prerequisites to go back to school, and I started at the very basic math. It was like, seriously, adding and subtracting. That's how terrible I am at math. It's not a skill for me either.
Well, you know, I swear I am mathematically impaired, and I've known that my whole life. I don't know what part of my brain doesn't work when it comes to that. And yet there was, you know, I was a straight-A student, and the only subject that I ever struggled in was math, because algebra I thought it was pretty little figures and letters and numbers all together, and that was really great, but it did not compute in my brain. And yet
me
the
too.
Only thing that, it just didn't. And, you know, I've got an IQ of 146, you know. Really? So what's the problem here, you know? But one thing that I just discovered when I was in high school, which was, you know, many decades ago, was that I had a distinct proclivity for geometry. And I didn't understand what that was. And I remember when I was a small child, this newfangled thing got invented called a spirograph. And I I got one for Christmas when I think I was maybe 10 years old. And
oh, I remember those, Andrea. Oh, my gosh, me too. I got one of those.
Oh, I just spent hours and hours and hours with the spirograph and all the different colored pens and would create these magnificent pictures that would be hanging all over our refrigerator at home. And, you know, my father was like, you know, what's with all the circles? You know, I was just a little kid. And it turned out that many, many years later, as I was really beginning my in-depth research and study of crop circles, that I realized the connection. And what was so fascinating to me about my spirograph was that on a piece of paper in a little plastic square thing, I could create my own crop circles. And I made the connection. all those decades later, I made the connection that that's what I was relating to. It was opening up a certain part of my brain. And then when I got to high school, I aced geometry. Geometry was like the absolutely made complete sense. There was order. There was design. There was something infinite about it. And it was the only math that I've ever been able to master. Everything else is gobbledygook. I'm surprised I can make change for a dollar, honestly.
I got to ask you,
since you mentioned
crop circles, what's your stance on crop circles? Do you think aliens are doing it? I know a bunch of people came forward and said that they were, you know, that it's established to be fake. But what did you learn from your research of crop circles?
I don't buy the people coming forward saying that they, in the dead of night with no flashlights, created perfect circles inside a variety of crops. And when these crop circles are studied scientifically, many of them are coming up with genetic malformations in the crop circles. They've literally been altered. The DNA of the plants have been altered by something. I don't know. I guess that there are some of them. I've seen a few where it was obvious to me that some idiot with way too much time on his hands went out into a field and tried to recreate something that he'd seen. And then I have seen crop circles that were so magnificent in design, so intricate in detail, that appeared within moments of the last time that the crop area had been surveyed, the acreage had actually been surveyed. There's just no way that anybody can convince me that these are not cosmic messages. The vast majority of them, I think, are absolutely real. I don't call extraterrestrials aliens because I don't think they're any more alien to this planet than we are. But I do, it almost feels insulting to me to call them that because they're just the galactic family and they know a lot more about this planet that we live on than we actually do. But I think that the crop circles have definite messages. Some carry binary code. Some have been deciphered. And the deeper and deeper and deeper I get into it over the course of time, the more I am convinced that these are clearly and definitively messages from the galactic family.
I tend to agree. I think there's more to it than just hoaxers. I'm sure there's hoaxers out there, but there is a level of intricacy and geometry involved with those that it is hard to believe that, you know, a few people would go out in the middle of the night and do that. And I've heard that too, where there's been some genetic malformations or weird energies within the crop circles. So, mm-hmm. It would be really interesting if anybody has actually been able to decipher messages from them. That I'm not aware of. Have you ever heard of that? Anybody figuring out what they actually mean?
I had one happen to me. I got a message. I don't know where it came from or why it came to me the way that it did. To this day, I am absolutely mesmerized by the fact that it did. But several years ago, when I first went to the Starworks Symposium in Laughlin, Nevada, which is coming up in November 11th of this year, I had a very strange, weird experience. And that's not unusual out in the desert, you know. And obviously, we are all gathering for a reason, you know, ufologists that gather for this conference, and they know that. I don't know exactly how to explain it, but it was one of the most phenomenal things that's ever happened to me. And in this conference takes place at the Aquarius Casino, and it's got two huge towers where all the hotel rooms are. And I went, checked in, and I went to go to my room, and I had to figure out, this was my first time there, and I had to figure out how the elevator system worked. It just seemed odd, and I figured out that if I walk into this large foyer, that has three elevator doors on each side of it, and a square tile black and white floor. If I stepped into an elevator on the left-hand side, then to get where my room was, when I came out of the elevator, I had to turn right. If I went in on the right-hand side, then to get to my room, I would have to turn left. And I, like 2 days into the conference, I went up to my room on a break, and I got in. I remember clearly, distinctly being pressed for time. And I got into the elevator that was in the center. It was the center door on the left-hand side, knowing that when it opened and I was in a rush, that I would have to get to my room and then get back downstairs to the conference center. And so I came out of the elevator, and I immediately took a right, and I was rushing. Well, when I came out of the elevator and I turned to the right, I ran into a wall. I had come up on the left-hand side, and I had come out on the right-hand side. And I was so disoriented. I was so dizzy. I was not nauseated, but just really almost like a vertigo feeling that I was having.
Oh, wow.
And I grabbed onto the wall and just... I remember distinctly just reading the numbers to the rooms, just reading, letting my eyes focus only on the numbers to the rooms until I could get to my room. And when I opened the door, I saw the bed. I was on it in a split second, and I slept for 2 hours. I missed two presentations back to back, and I was in like a coma. I was so exhausted. I don't know what happened to me, but something happened to me. And when I went back downstairs, I was still, my equilibrium was still off a bit. When I woke up, I didn't know where I was. And I went downstairs and finished out the conference for the afternoon and the evening, and then went back up to my room. And when I went back up to my room, my SEO administrator, who handles all my websites and all my search engine optimization person. She's my webmaster, mistress, as it is. She sends me a picture of a new crop circle that had just been discovered that day. And it was a crop circle that had inside the circle a picture of the foyer with the checkerboard floor and the three sets of doors on both sides of it. And she said, "Does this seem familiar to you?" I've got it. I can send you a picture of it. You can put it up on your website.
Wow.
Yeah, send it.
You know,
what do you think it means?
I would call that, I don't know, but I know that it means something. And that's enough for me, if that makes any sense at all. You know, that Margie sent me that fresh, new found crop circle the day that that happened to me while I was in the desert in Nevada and she was in Minneapolis and it was discovered in England. There's some connection. I don't know what it is. But it blew me back in my chair when I saw the photograph, the aerial photograph of it. It was an identical duplication of the elevator foyer at the Aquarius Casino in Laughlin, Nevada.
Wow. I love Laughlin. That's beautiful. That's probably built up so much anymore in the last 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Might be a time for a trip to England. Seems like, I kind of do believe in those cosmic messages. I believe that there are messages all around us that we don't necessarily recognize. But something like that, that's really interesting. And it would be interesting to figure out a way to research what's going on there.
Well, it was, I believe, many of them are found around in the fields of Wiltshire. A couple of them that have had that spoke to me personally have appeared very close to Stonehenge, literally within sight of it. And I, when I was I think, maybe 7 or 8 years old, I did my first book report. And I was in advanced classes from a very early age. And so we got to, in the particular class that I was in, we got to choose what we wanted to research and write about. And the first thing that I ever wrote about or did a paper on was Stonehenge. I have had an incredible draw. The place just calls to me. And I'm not the only one. It calls to millions of people around the world that have that on their so-called bucket list, you know, that want to make the trip out there. And I know that I will, but this is going to sound nuts, you know, and please forgive me. It's very late here on the East Coast. So I'm not feeling so guarded because I'm tired. But the reason that I have not gone to England yet is because I feel like if I go, I'm never coming back. And I have to come back. My family is here. The bulk of my readers and, you know, my tribe are here in the United States. But the call to go to England for me, within me, is so strong that I really think that if I go there, just, you know, I said something will make me stay. I can't really explain it. It's a very, very powerful draw. And I met a friend several years ago, about 5-6 years ago now, just online, just another paranormal person in England. And he lives in Derbyshire, he and his family, and which is very close to Chesterfield, which is just south of the Peak District. I've studied maps and the history of England for so many years of my life that I can literally visualize the layout of the country. And he and I were talking one day. We were Skyping, and he was talking to my mother, and she was telling him that some of our very earliest ancestors come from England. And he said, well, where? What part of England? And it turns out that Jonas Riles, who is an ancestor of mine, had come to the United States, or maybe he was the father, I'm not sure. But there was a marriage that took place in the late 1500s. And of this marriage, I'm not going to say names because I don't have the paperwork right in front of me and I wouldn't want to screw it up, you know, respect for the dead and all of this marriage took place in the late 1500s, and this couple had 6 children, and 5 of the 6 are buried 12 miles away from my friend's house. He went and found our ancestors in the graveyard, the cemetery of the St. Peter's Cathedral in Sheffield, England. The 6th one is the one that decided to come to the colonies in the early 1600s, and he's my direct relation.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's definitely a draw. There's something there. I think that England is, for all of its brutality and all of the, you know, over the course of the ages, there were no fiercer fighters on the planet than the English, the British. I mean, the history is just gruesome. And yet I find these people to be so refined and so genteel and so intelligent and so fascinating. And, you know, it's like forgive what all their ancestors did. They turned out okay. I told my mom one of these days, very soon, we're going to have to make a trip across the pond because mom is actually a Buchanan. She comes from Clan Buchanan. On her mother's side, where the Cherokee and the Scots intermarried in the early days of the colonies. And so she's traced us back on her side to the mid-1500s. but can trace us actually back on the Scott side to around 900 on her side of the
family. Wow.
And she wants to go and see the Buchanan Castle while she is still present and accounted for on planet Earth. And I promised her I would make that happen.
That'd be an exciting trip. I don't think I've ever had a draw like that to some particular location, but it seems like, you know, there definitely is something pulling you there. And I don't know. I'm a pretty big believer in ETs, and who knows, maybe there's an ET connection trying to draw you there for some experience.
And that could very well be. I wouldn't be surprised by that. I mean, I would love to be present at the formation. I've seen film footage that has yet to be debunked. And I work very closely with some of the very top ufologists in the world. So I have access to things that don't necessarily always make it out into the public eye. Or if they do, they make it slowly. Nobody wants to put their names on stuff because they're afraid they're going to just be, just devoured from within the paranormal community, which is very often the case, sadly, but it's the truth. But I've seen film footage of three little tiny white orbs passing over a pasture and creating a crop circle in about 5 seconds, literally 5 seconds. And there it was the next morning. This was a farmer who shot this film footage with night vision cameras. It's absolutely amazing. But, I think that there is so much. I think that the safest assumption that any of us can make ever is that we know nothing compared to what there is to know. And so that's my common denominator. That's my base of operations, is that I know nothing compared to what there is to know. And if you start there, then you don't get caught up in assumptions and drawing conclusions prematurely. This is all for study. The fact is that Nikola Tesla was correct, and he predicted that when science and spirituality merge and the study of both work hand in hand, that's where the great plethora of answers will come from. Everything that is considered accepted science now was not that long ago considered pseudoscience. And so therefore, I don't think that it is a blight or any kind of tarnish on people working as field investigators in the paranormal for it to be called a pseudoscience. It has yet to prove itself as a science, and the only way that that can happen is through repetition, redundancy, being able to basically through control group and experimentation, be able to achieve the same result consistently. And that's not the nature of what we do in terms of spirits, for instance. We lived at that farm and we lived among the dead for 10 years. And yet none of them ever walked up to us, extended a hand of blue mist and said, "Hello, my name is." That never happened. If they really wanted to make their presence known and they wanted to make their former life known to us and who they were, they would identify themselves. I got the impression that that didn't matter. And I even wrote about that in the books when I said it doesn't matter who they were or who they are. They are. That's all that matters. You know, it's just absolutely miraculous to me. I'm still stunned and amazed after all the experiences that I've had in my life. Whenever I have an encounter with spirit, I'm still as shocked and surprised and thrilled and uplifted as I was the first time I saw a full body apparition and realized cognizantly, consciously, that there is something beyond our mortal existence. And I knew that at the age of 12, and I'm 58 years old, and I still can't tell you what it is. It just
Do you think that some spirits are more have more power than others? Like, I'm always fascinated about when I hear objects being able to be manipulated or spirits manifesting, and I don't really understand. In your experience, are there different levels of spirits? Like, what determines whether an entity can move something or cause something to happen versus another?
I don't know. That's an excellent question. And if I'm being completely honest, which I'm always completely honest, then it's only fair to say I don't know when I don't know. However, I do have I have hypotheses. I have theories that have developed over the decades. One of the theories is that in order for spirits to manifest in this plane of action, they have to derive a certain amount of energy from something. And therefore, sometimes a spirit will just manifest as mist, and yet that same spirit can also conceivably manifest as a full body apparition. It just depends on how much energy is in the environment at the time and what they have to draw upon. There is a great deal of speculation about the fact that unleashing five children into that household that was apparently relatively quiet for some period, the former owner, he knew there was something going on in that house, but it was not to such an extreme that he didn't want my parents to buy that house and bring our family into it. He suggested to my mother that it was the perfect place to raise a family. So, you know, I wouldn't trade any of it. I wouldn't trade any of it just because, and neither would my mother or anybody else in my family, because we learned so much about life and death and the afterlife in that 10-year period of time in our lives that we have now subsequently been able to share all these decades later when people were prepared to hear it. You know, there's so many
Andrea,
people out there.
Can I ask you something? How do you get people when you moved? This is a question I have. Did you or your family wanted the spirits to follow you? And if you did anything, did you do anything to not have that happen? Or if they did, you had no choice? That's the question.
Well, no, we never thought that they could follow us. We thought that when we left that, I mean, they weren't in our lives before we moved to the farm. So it stands to reason that they were bound in some way to the farmhouse. And so it didn't occur to us that when we left the farm that they would follow us or that they could follow us. It wasn't really on the radar in the same way that they weren't on the radar when we moved into the house 10 years earlier. Nobody thought we were moving into a haunted house. That was not even... I mean, nothing that anybody even thought about, you know, as far
right.
as my parents were concerned. They were buying one of the original colonial homes that was still standing in the United States of America. I mean, oh, my God. You know, that is amazing in its own right, that this house even survived all the coastal storms and the hurricanes and, the, you know, so on, and is, you know, still standing intact after all these hundreds of years. But, no, it was not something that any of us thought about or considered, and it wasn't until we arrived in Georgia after we sold the house and we moved in June of 1980. My sister Cindy and a family friend had come down to bring the horses prior to our arrival, the rest of the family. And when we left the house, Nancy, my sister Nancy, stayed behind and stayed on as the caretaker of the property for some period of time. When we arrived in Georgia, it was 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning. We drove all night long. And when we pulled up into the yard of a new house, there was a full-body apparition standing right behind my sister, who was standing in the floor-to-ceiling front window holding a pot of coffee to welcome us. And there she was, standing right behind my sister. And
wow.
That we realized that they weren't housebound at all and that they were going to go wherever we did and that the attachments that were formed at that farmhouse were permanent.
Wow.
Is there no way to get rid of it?
I'm sorry, you both asked me a question at once, and I didn't hear either one of them.
Oh, we asked the same question, just worded differently. Is there a way to stop an attachment like that, or did you do anything to stop it, or are they still around you?
No. No, none of us. I mean, gosh, that was 1980. We didn't even have the vernacular. We didn't even have the language. Nobody called it an attachment. Do you know what I mean? Nobody, that wasn't even a
uh-huh.
phrase or a reference point back then. This was still something that nobody wanted to talk about, let alone try to define or put a post-it note on and label it. All I know is that there was a spirit standing behind Nancy as we left the farm, and the same spirit was standing behind Cindy when we arrived in Georgia a day and a half later.
Jeez.
So that's an attachment. And or what we refer to, you know, since it seems to be our human proclivity to want to label everything. But no, none of us thought, oh, we have to make this go away. Oh, no, this can't happen. We're now, you know, going to be in a new haunted house. You know, how many times? I mean, both of you are well-rooted, well-grounded in paranormal investigation and research, and you know how many people say, oh, I had this thing that happened to me, and then I thought it was the house, and I moved, and it was still there, and then I moved again, and it was still there, and oh, my God, the attachment is to me, not the house.
Exactly.
Well, yes, exactly. You know, it's like my line from the book, no matter where you go, there they are. And I think that it's just a matter of exposure and overexposure. I think that when you stop seeing three-dimensionally, stop sensing three-dimensionally, we don't live in a three-dimensional five-sensory realm. That's what we relegate ourselves to and call reality. But essentially, that's a very limited view of life. We live in a multidimensional universe. And once you make that quantum leap from living in a black and white 3D realm into technicolor, and you can see extra dimensionally, multidimensionally, however you want to call it, you can't go back. You know, that's like, you know, once you have an expansive thought in your consciousness, you can't unthink it. You can't unhear something that you heard that stuck with you for life. You can't. It's a process of growth, I think, and once you grow spiritually to such an extent that you can have conscious communication with spirit or extraterrestrials, you can't close that door again, and you can turn your back on it and pretend that it doesn't exist, but eventually something's going to reach through and tap you on the shoulder and say, here I am, I never left.
Wow.
That's why I don't think about it. That's my exact worry, is if I focus on it too much or pay too much attention, I give it power. And quite frankly, I don't want, you know, any paranormal experiences. I'm big into the UFO thing, and I've done paranormal investigations, and I've captured things I can't explain. But it was always a worry in the back of my head that something could follow me home. But I always said this affirmation in my brain that kind of was my own personal connection thing, and I don't think anything's followed me, but, you know, it worries me anytime you dabble in the paranormal, even talking about it now, you know, is something going to take notice and latch on, and I hope that never happens, but you never know.
I've had many intrusions over the course of the years doing interviews, whether it be on Skype or over the phone or even on television or video, where very odd things have happened or voices have penetrated and permeated the airspace. And, you know, I've had threats issued, never to me, only to George. They don't like him. No, it's not true. It's, well, I know, I think that actually is true. I think that they really have problems with George. But when we did our show, A World Awakening, we did that for, you know, a couple of years. And there were, depending on the guest we had and depending on the topic we were discussing, we would have interference on the line. And there would literally be either synthesized noise coming through or actual voices. We picked up a very ominous chant one night that came through out of nowhere. They're all around us. You know, that's the thing. People think, oh, I don't want to be touched by spirit. Oh, I don't want an attachment. Well, guess what? We all have attachments. All of us do. We are all completely, utterly surrounded by spirit. And just because we can't see it doesn't mean they're not there. Some of us can see it. And when I do, I consider it a blessing, not a curse. To be touched by spirit is a blessing. It is a rare, precious glimpse into the realm from which we come and will inevitably return. It's like looking through a window and seeing home. And I think of it as very spiritual and very lovely. And even my mother, who went through hell in that house with that one malevolent spirit that just, you know, tormented her no end. And yet she said, I wouldn't trade it for anything. It changed my life in ways that nothing else could have. It expanded my frame of reference and my consciousness in ways that nothing else could have. And, you know, and I've often wondered, because I had my first real close encounter with an ET when I was 13 years old. We'd been living at the farm just about not quite a year when it happened. And I often wondered if it was the opening up that the spiritual encounters had created in me as an individual that allowed me to see what I saw in the sky, because what I saw was an entire flotilla of geometrically shaped vessels that were passing over the farm. And it wasn't until 35 years later that I read the MUFON reports. I read the reports, the original reports that were issued from this. And that flotilla of ships was seen from Nova Scotia to southern Maryland. And then it hop-skipped it across the Atlantic Ocean, did a tour of Western Europe. And when the Royal Air Force scrambled their fighter jets to go after it, it disappeared off the radar in a split second over the North Pole. Now, I lived for decades not knowing that there were other people who saw it. But here's the most important question to ask here. Not the answer. Here's the question to ask here. That flotilla of ships passed directly over the farmhouse that I was living in, that my family was in. It passed from Nova Scotia to Maryland. There were over 10,000 reports of it, but it went over about 50 million people just stateside. Now, let's say that 1 in 10 reported it, or 1 in 100 reported it. That's still not even a million people that saw it out of 50 million. Why did we see it and not everybody else did? Why?
Do you think some paranormal event could actually be ET related and not ghosts or spirit related? Because,
yep.
I mean, I've seen a lot of strange things. I've had a lot of ET UFO experiences, so that's really what my background is, more than so than like ghosts. But I wonder if some of that stuff isn't being misinterpreted and it's the doings of the ETs.
Yes. I agree. I think that Yeah, I agree that there is, and that's really where the bulk of my research has gone, Jason. I really, before I breathe my last breath on this planet, I want to prove that there is a point of correlation and integration between extraterrestrials and spirit. Obviously, there are points of reference that need to be fleshed out, one of them being, of course, that ETs are living and spirits have passed on from this realm and are no longer alive in a human vessel. But I also find that my encounters with ETs are deeply spiritual, extremely benevolent, very loving, a higher love, what I call a higher love. And I feel that, and I trust my gut. My intuition has never once lied to me, and I know that there's a connection. And I think that when humanity makes that grand sweeping leap as a whole from three-dimensional to five-dimensional living, that's when we will understand. That's when everybody will be able to perceive spirit. That's when everyone will have an awareness that we are so not alone in the universe. I think that we're evolving at an absolutely tumultuous rate of speed as a species, and it's our only salvation. If we do not grow beyond dumb, then we deserve our fate. You know, but there are millions of us on this planet that have been touched by spirit, that know that there is something more, that there is something else, that there is someone out there who cares about us and who's watching over us. It's the reason I get up every morning. I can't wait to come outside and look up into the sky. The vast amount of my sightings, my conscious contact, occur in broad daylight. I've seen vessels as close as probably no more than 5,000 feet away from me. I can't even begin to describe the joy that I feel when I have an encounter that close. And all I want is what I tell them: come closer, come closer. Be not afraid. I'm not afraid of you. You don't be afraid of me. I am here on this planet as your emissary, as your spokesperson. I talk about what I have seen and what I have experienced. Trust me to get the message out. Me and everyone else that you know is pure of heart, with no ulterior motives except to educate humanity, humanity about the actual essential nature of our being. And I've made great strides in that respect. I had an experience about a month ago that just blew me away, absolutely blew me away, and I've got physical evidence of it. How many ufologists can say, here's your physical evidence? I've got it.
What kind of physical evidence was it?
Well, I got very sick in February. I went up to Rhode Island to do an event, and when I came back, I was not myself. I had been exposed to something horrible, and I kind of laid around and flopped around like a fish on a pier for about a week and a half, thinking, okay, today I feel better, okay, and I can function. And then I'd just get sick again, and over and over, and it was all started in my head. It moved down into my chest. I was in trouble, and it had been so many years since I'd been sick at all with anything that it kind of threw me. And I was coming up on another event that I had to go to California for, and I just said, and I got to do something about this. This is out of control here. This is not getting better. My immune system is not fighting this the way that it should. And so I went to my doctor and I told her, and she said, oh, here's what I just had to take to get over it. And she gave me two regimens of antibiotics, which I took with me to California and finished off when I got back. and was feeling infinitely better. But the reason that I was prompted to go to the doctor the day that I did, which was 4 days before I left for California, was because I felt something happening in the eustachian tube of my right ear. And all of a sudden, within about 5 minutes, I felt this burning, horrible sensation, and like an abscess or something just grew up in the side of my throat and down the side of my ear in that tube area. And I was so tender, and it hurt. It burned like fire, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm in trouble. I got to go. I just got in the car and went straight to my doctor. And she looked down at my ear, and she's like, oh, my God, you're loaded with infection. We got to take care of this right now. And that's why I got slammed with the antibiotics. Well, I took my regimens. I came back, felt so much, ever so much better. So I've got this knot. 3 or 4 days more passed. And then I woke up one morning, and I didn't feel well. Something felt wrong. And I leaned my hand up against my head and the side of my neck, and the swelling was coming back. And I was like, oh, my God, I've got to go back to – I've got to do this again? Really? You know, I mean, really? This was awful.
That's terrible.
And I felt like somebody had stuck a hot fire poker up into the corner of my mouth, up into the cheek area of my mouth on the side of my face. And I took my tongue and I reached up there, and I'm sorry that this is disgusting, but this is the truth. I reached up there and I felt what felt like a spike coming out the side of my cheek. And when I touched my tongue to it, it had a point on it. And when I touched my tongue to it, it released all the poison that was still in my body. And I was in the bathroom spitting and gargling. It was disgusting what came out of my mouth. And I had no idea that whatever it was that I was touching with my tongue was absolutely solid, and it had an opening at the end of it, and that's where all this stuff, and it was attached to the inside of my cheek. And once all the poison came out, I reached back up there, and I thought, well, whatever, it must have been a loose flap of skin or something, because it was gone. 3 days later, it was back, and it was bigger. I think either it receded into my cheek, and I couldn't feel it, or I had spit it out, and another one was put in its place. But I reached up into my mouth, and I touched the tip of it, and the very last bit of infection was released. And I spit it up and cleaned my mouth out, and that thing was still there. And I reached up with my nice long fingernails, and I grabbed a hold of it in my mouth, and I yanked it out of the side of my cheek. And I have got this tiny little, what appears to be a medical instrument, that I immediately took to my doctor, and I said, put this under your microscope and tell me what this is. And she said, I can't tell you what this is, but I can tell you what it's not. It's not a shard of bone. It's not a fragment. It's not calcium. And it's not plastic as we know plastic. I don't know what this is.
Wow. You know, we have something in common. We both have had evidence left behind. Mine was sent to Whitley Strieber years ago, and he sent it to a lab in Texas, and they did all these tests on it. But it wasn't an implant. It was like a tool left behind from a UFO inside my house. It was crazy times. But when another question that I had is, when I had that experience, there was a lot of government, like, intervention. They were installing weird electric boxes outside where I lived. They were following me and this researcher around, taking our pictures. Have you ever had an experience, because you've kind of opened up to these things, have you ever noticed people taking an interest in you, like, government-wise?
Yeah, all the time. And that's fine. You know, I mean, my life's an open book anyway. I don't care. They can tap my phones all they want. They might hear some bad language occasionally, but other than that, you know, other than my favorite curse words, which I only reserve for private conversations, not on the air, so that might bring you some comfort. I had a couple of years ago, I was flying from San Antonio to Boulder, Colorado to do another episode for Open Minds on Gaia TV. And when I got to the San Antonio airport, somebody met me there who I did not expect. And he took my luggage and brought it through a back where, like, the crews go through. I didn't go through normal security. And I was TSA approved, but even if you're TSA approved, you've got to go through security. And I was escorted. I went around security somehow. He said, just follow me. And I was loaded up onto the plane. I don't know why. That had never happened to me before. And it hasn't happened to me since. Yeah. Plane. There were only about 30 people on the plane to go to Boulder, or to Denver, actually, is where I was flying in. And I thought, that was odd. Okay, that's odd, you know, because usually every plane I'm on is full to brimming, no room to breathe. And so I sat down in my seat. I grabbed a window seat. There were plenty to choose from. And just as they were getting ready to close the door, this very tall, statuesque woman entered the plane, and she came over to me. I had my book in my lap, one of my books in my lap, she sat down right next to me, and she had ample seats to choose from. And so I was cordial. I said, good afternoon, and I said, my name is, and she said, I know who you are. And I said, oh, okay, and your name is? No answer. I said, okay. I said, well, I'm an author. And she just turned and looked at me, and she said, I work for the federal government. And that was the end of that conversation.
That
is so crazy.
What was the purpose, do you felt, Andrea? What was the thing about her?
Intimidation.
Okay.
They knew that I was on my way to Denver to talk about UFOs in a forum that reaches millions and millions of people. They know everything that I do, and I don't care. I really don't. You know, shame on them if they're withholding information from humanity for their own nefarious purposes. Shame on them. I've got anything I experience, I am willing to discuss. I don't care what people think. I don't care if they think I'm a nut job. I don't care. I really don't. If I did, I wouldn't be able to do what I do.
It's intimidation. Anytime I had years ago, those types of experiences, it was always super obvious taking pictures and stuff like that. They could have done that covertly, you know, not out in the open. And so
yeah.
I totally get that. But we're running out of time. We only have a couple minutes left. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to let everybody know if they wanted to contact you or get the book or where they could learn more information on your experiences.
Oh, I'm so easy to find. Everybody should follow me on Facebook because I'm pretty religious about maintaining my sites. I have 5 pages on Facebook, but you can find me easily on my personal page or House of Darkness, House of Light. I'm about ready to revamp my website. I don't even invite people to go look at it yet. It's old. It needs a hairdo. So I'm working on that. And I'm working on the screenplay for the movies. I got a 3-movie deal for my actual story, House of Darkness, House of Light. But they can find me anywhere. Yeah. Just Google my name. I'm very easy to find, easy to contact. I'm ultra responsive. Unless, you know, there's something going on that's so huge that I get behind on my personal correspondence. But I really do try to stay in contact and open a line of communication and even have dialogue with my readers, because that's why I wrote these books, you know, for them to free other people to be able to talk about their experiences, even if they were traumatic or if they weren't, you know, just anything that they've been through in their lives. And I welcome people to do that because They need to have somebody that they can go to that they feel safe with and they know has experience, a wealth of, you know, resources and of experience myself. So I'll believe them. That's very important for people. The reason that they don't, that they withhold the way that they do is because they're so afraid of being disbelieved. And it's the only way to live freely is to speak the truth and speak it openly. The only way to live freely is to abolish fear from our lives, just abolish it. And there's a process of doing that, which I talk about on a lot of my YouTube videos and that type of thing. So, yeah, I'm easy to find. You know, long story short, I'm really easy to find.
Yeah, when's your release, or can you tell us when are they expecting the release of House of Darkness, House of Light, a movie?
I'm working on the screenplays right now. Should be done with all three of them within the next 3 or 4 months. We'll probably start shooting. We're going to shoot all three films back to back, and we'll probably start shooting sometime in the late fall or early winter of this year, if all goes according to plan.
So this is going to be your version, supposedly, of the remake of The Conjuring, correct? This is actually the truth of what the movie
is
going to be about.
Right. This is actually going to be the true story, not
exactly,
The Conjuring.
That's what I thought.
They will bear absolutely no resemblance to each other than the names will be recognizable, and that's it.
Awesome.
I'm proud of
Andrea,
you, girl. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it sounds like you're super busy, and I want to thank you again for taking the time and coming on Paranormal Horizons again and sharing your experiences. I'm glad that we got to talk a little bit of ET stuff, because I always get excited when I hear stuff like that, and just super fascinating stories with the ETs, and thank you again for coming on the show tonight.
No, it's my pleasure. I'd be happy to join you anytime. God knows there's plenty to discuss in this field.
Oh, yes.
Andrea, thank
Sherry?
You for staying up and being able to just be on our show. We appreciate you again. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So, yes, have a good night, and we will definitely be in touch.
Okay, great. You take care, both of you. God bless, and enjoy your happy spring.
Okay, you too.
Okay. All right, good night.
Thanks,
take care. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Okay, bye.
Wow, some interesting stories there, Sherry. And it reminds me kind of some of the things were reminded me of my own experiences, you know, back 25 years ago with ETs and the government and all that sort of stuff. So it's always a pleasure to talk to Andrea Perrin, and hopefully we can get her back on the show in the future, because there's so much to talk about.
I know, there is, and I know it sounds like she's going to be really busy, but, you know, it's good. I think that having her truth be known and made to the big screen with her version and the real story is going to be very enlightening. I like that. So, anyway, wealth of information, wealth of experience, I'm glad to have her. Anyway, next week we're going to have Mike Freeze, and we're going to, you know, there's so many things to talk about. I think I'm going to get a hold of him this week, and on the phone we're probably just going to discuss different variances and come up with some kind of plan. So as of right now, we don't have any subject. Who knows? We might just kind of wing it and just go with the flow of things. So, but I'm just very happy to just really happy that our guests are always, you know, very welcoming and you know, really just happy to be on our show. So just really, really appreciate each and every one of our guests and our listeners, too.
Absolutely. Well, with that, it's the end of the show, and hope everybody has an outstanding week. And we'll be back next Sunday at 8 p.m. West Coast time for another episode. Unless you have anything else, Sherry, I guess we can be done.
Nope, I don't have anything to say, but everybody, thank you for your support, and next week, and just take care, and God bless, and peace to each and every one of you.
Good night, everyone.
Take care. Bye-bye.